This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Mitchell Kaplan, and this is The Literary Life. When someone says to you, "I'm a sucker for deckle edges," you know you're in the presence of a book lover and a reader. And there's no one I know who is more of both than Connie Ogle. She's the former book editor and film reviewer for the Miami Herald, who now writes on all kinds of cultural issues for the paper. She established and moderates an online forum called Readers with Attitude. She reads over 150 books a year. And there's no one better to inaugurate a brand new feature of The Literary Life, a new feature that I'm very simply calling, What Are You Reading? Connie Ogle, what are you reading?
Well, I just finished Claire V. Watkins' novel, I Love You, But I've Chosen Darkness. And this is one of those books. When you finish it, you really don't know where to go next because it just leaves such a tremendous, I don't even know what the word is. It's almost, it leaves you with a book hangover. You know, you can't really focus on anything else. I've been wandering around my house all morning trying to pick the next book to read. She wrote a collection of stories called Battleborn, which was her first collection, or actually her first book. And I read that years ago, and the stories were great. I did not read her second book. This is her third. And it's, the jacket cover is gorgeous. It's got a great title. And it's really about a young woman who is really trying to figure out her life, but she's left her husband and small daughter, or baby daughter, and to go back to the desert she came from. And it's, you could call it autofiction because the character is named Claire V. Watkins. There are a lot of similarities in the past. Claire V. Watkins is, of course, the daughter of Paul Watkins, who was the right-hand man for Charles Manson. He used to procure young girls for Charles Manson. And the character is also the daughter of Paul Watkins. So there's a lot of similarities. But what she does with this blend of fiction and autobiography is just, it's really tremendous.
Well, yeah, so I'm going to take it off my shelf. And be one of the next ones I'm going to read. You talked about walking around your house trying to figure out just what your next book is going to be. Why don't you talk a little bit about the way you approach your prolific reading schedule? You read more than anyone that I know. And so when you're thinking about picking your next book, what do you do?
Well, I'm kind of like a, you know, I guess you could say I'm kind of like a raven. I'm very distracted by shiny objects. So if someone in the Facebook book group, Miami Herald Books, suggests something that looks good, I'll run out and get that or download it from the library or, you know. So what happens is books pile up around my house because then I buy a bunch of books and then the ones I bought, I don't get to. But I've been trying to be better about reading stuff as I buy it. But I do have an entire bookshelf in my house that's all stuff I haven't read. And I go and stand in front of it and then I gravitate back to the newer stuff, which is a problem because there's a lot of good books on that shelf that I just haven't managed to get to yet.
I'm surrounded by thousands of them every day that I keep. And my problem is that I bring them home thinking I'm going to read them at some point. And before I know it, I'm I'd probably have to live to about 190 if I was going to read all the books that I've piled up that I want to be reading. Talk about that group, the Facebook group that you run. It's so lively and people are so devoted to it. Talk a little bit about it.
We started Miami Herald Books years ago. I can't even tell you how many, maybe seven, something like that, eight, nine. And the original idea was to engage people with my reviews, which of course now I'm no longer the book editor at the Herald. But this thing has sort of taken on a life of its own. And I think the key to it is we don't all read the same books, so there's no pressure to read, you know, and everyone is allowed to post. The only thing we don't allow is people are not allowed to come on it and try to get you to read their own book, because that becomes a marketing thing that is very, very boring. But anybody who's part of the group, if they've read something good, and it can be anything, it can be fiction, nonfiction, romance, poetry. We don't discriminate. You can talk about anything. You can post book-related memes. You can post book-related links. And I think that's what makes it work. There's no pressure to read a certain book. You know, you don't have to have such and such book read by the end of, you know, this particular point in time. And it's become a lot of fun. It's, you know, I have to work at it, but it does become fun, and people do like to participate.
It's the conversation that, you know, every book lover has with other book lovers.
There are some authors, and we have some publicists who are part of it, who provide a really interesting perspective into the book world. A lot of what we talk about is, you know, gossip that's going on in the book world, and you know, lately it's been, you know, did Random House cancel Norman Mailer? And people are just interested in that stuff. And we have a lot of fun conversations. And I get a ton of great recommendations from that group. And that, again, it's kind of, the joke is it's ruined all of us, because our to-be-read piles are so huge now, you know, because there's always, every day there's someone going on, hey, I just read this. This was great. You guys should read it.
Yeah, I mean, the dirty little secret that we all know is there are so many books published every year that we do need these guides. And, you know, your group provides that guide, you know, through the discussion that begins to ensue over a particular title. So what did you choose when you walked around your house?
I don't have anything picked out yet. I'm eyeing The Love Songs of W.E. Du Bois.
Yeah, that's one that I took home as well. I haven't read it yet either.
It's a beautiful physical book. It's just got the decal. I'm a sucker for decal edges, you know, and it's just a physically gorgeous book. So I keep eyeing it, and I look at the length of it. I'm like, am I ready to commit to that? I don't know, but I think that's the one I'm going to go with next.
Well, and you read primarily fiction, right?
I was real bad about nonfiction last year. I usually read more of it, and I'm going to try to read more this year. One of the books I really want to read is the book about the Sacklers, Empire of Pain.
Right.
And I have not managed to get to it yet. And I read the author's book, Say Nothing, and loved it. So I'm sure it's going to be very interesting. I just haven't managed to bust it open yet.
Well, the bad news for you is that Raiden Keefe has a new book coming out. Well, it's called Rogues, which looks really, really good. So you may get backed up a little bit. He's such a great writer and so much fun to read. And he tackles these large subjects that in many ways are tragic. I mean, the Sackler book just infuriated me. Between that and watching the series Dope Sick, I just was, you know, daggers flew out of my eyes whenever I'd hear their names. But
well, Say Nothing, his book Say Nothing led me down a path. And of course, it led me to a sort of a wide variety of things, because I'm very interested in that. I should say Nothing is about the troubles in Ireland and various things that happened there. And it led me to a novel called Milkman, which... Right. I forget what the author's name is. I don't remember it right now, but she wrote a novel set during that time. And so I listened to that on audio, and that was fascinating. And then someone on the books group suggested a series of detective novels by Adrian McKinty, the Sean Duffy novels. And they're set in Ireland in the early 80s, and they're phenomenal. I can't get enough of them, and there's only six. So I'm not reading the last two. I'm kind of, you know, keeping them for when I, you know, really need something I know is going to be good. Led me to all these things.
Yeah, and then you could go to Kevin Barry as well for something kind of not completely during that time period, I don't think, but he covers some similar territory. I like his work a lot. So let's talk about, you know, we're just dawning on this 2022, but talk about, you know, some of the books that you read last year that stand out in your mind.
It's, you know, everybody always wants to pick a, you know, you pick one book, and of course that's impossible. I made everybody in the books group do it just to be ornery, but I loved The Sentence, Louise Erdrich's The Sentence, which is a very much a 2020 novel. It's also a ghost story set in a bookstore, so that part is kind of delightful. And then, but she manages to make it work with this story about what happened in Minneapolis in 2020, which is the pandemic, George Floyd, protests. It's a very topical book, but it also is a wonderful story. I was also a big fan of The Final Revival of Opal and Nev by Donnie Wahlberg, which is about a rock duo in the 70s, and there's a riot at one of their concerts, a race riot at one of their concerts. And it's sort of about the fallout from that time to now. And I could not get enough of that book. I could have kept reading that book. It was just really, really well done and fascinating, especially if you like music, which I, of course, I do. Some other stuff I liked would be, let's see, what else was good? I really enjoyed a book called Open Water. It just won the Costa Prize for Best First Novel. The author's name is eluding me. I think it's Caleb something. It's his first book. And it's a short book, and it's just absolutely beautifully written. It's very romantic, and it's about a young couple. They're young artists in London. They're Black. And this plays a part in it, because the book is really about male vulnerability and how dangerous it is for a young Black man to show any vulnerability. And this sort of filters over into his romantic life. And it's a beautiful book, and I was so pleased to see it won an award. I'll be really curious to see what this author does next.
It's Caleb Nelson, and I believe he's from Nigeria, I believe. No, or Ghana. He might be Ghanaian.
I think he's...
And it all takes place in London. I read it as well, and I felt the same way you did.
Some people don't like to read about younger people because they can't relate to it. But for me, reading a book like Open Water, or even the Sally Rooney book, Beautiful World, Where Are You? It's like looking at the lifestyles of people who live on a different planet. That's how much older I am now. But it's really interesting to me, because people in their 20s look at their life differently than I do. And I find that interesting. So I did enjoy that. You know what? Another book I loved from last year is Matrix by Lauren Groff. Oh. I've been a fan of hers forever, but Matrix might be my favorite book of hers. Did you read a book called How Beautiful We Were? Mbolo Mabue. I might be pronouncing that
incorrectly. I have it. I brought it home because it ended up on a lot of the best of lists at the end of the year. And did you read it?
Yeah, it's so good. And it was one of those ones, I read it because it came out early in the year. Sometimes I feel like by the time you get to the end of the year, you forget about the books you read earlier. But it's stunning. It's heartbreaking. And it's about the death of this village that's basically being poisoned by a corporation. So if you need, you know, an upbeat, sunny read, this is probably not the book to read, but it's so beautifully written. I've been trying to push that on people lately too.
Talk a little bit, if you could, about what you do when you set out in a new year. Do you kind of map your reading strategy?
I used to do that. I find one of those book challenges online, and I always had fun doing that. I enjoyed that. You know, that would be like, read one book with the color green in the title, or read a sci-fi book, which is always hard for me because sci-fi is not really my strong point. Although I actually read a sci-fi series this past year that I liked very much. So go figure. You know, anything is possible if you can get
which
me to
one? Which sci-fi series?
Martha Wells' Murderbot series. And I was hand-sold the first book at a bookstore in Helena, Montana, by a very, very passionate bookseller who loved these books and said, it doesn't matter if you're a sci-fi fan, you will like these books. And she was 100% correct. And I could not wait to get my hands on all of them. And I've read four. I think there's six books in all, but the main quartet I've read. Anyway, I'm digressing 100%. But I think that proves that now I don't really set a pattern. I think, okay, I'm going to read, you know, I'm going to read more nonfiction. It's more general. I keep telling myself I'm going to read Moby Dick. This is going to be the year I get my white whale. But I'm, you know, we may be talking a year from now and I still haven't seen it. I haven't seen the first page. But so I sort of set general goals, but then I let myself be sold books by, you know, booksellers, and I let myself be influenced by people in the group. If there's something everyone is loving or people I trust recommend things to me, I try to be flexible enough to read as widely as I can.
How many books did you read last year?
I read 121, and that includes audiobooks. That's everything.
That's remarkable. That's really...
Well, Mitchell, remember, we had the first half of the, well, not the first half, but the first quarter of the year, you know, we were still all at home, not going anywhere. So I had a lot of time on my hands.
Yeah, but you've been doing that year in and year out. You've been very prolific in the way that you read. Did you come across Bewilderment? Did you read that at all?
I did read Bewilderment, and I liked it very much. It was almost too sad to bear.
Yeah, it slayed me at the end. I mean, you know, as a father of two sons, the father-son story really, really captured me. But I also have to say, you know, Flowers for Algernon, for me, was one of my early reading experience that, you know, I cried and I was shaken. And I think I was in middle school, you know, and it really showed me what the power of words could really do.
I'm a little embarrassed how far I was into Bewilderment before I realized this is Flowers for Algernon in a way, you know, and told in a different way. The language in that book is gorgeous. I have not read The Overstory. That's also one of the books that's on my list to read this year, his book, The Overstory, because so many people in the group love it. A lot of people don't. So which actually makes it more interesting to me, because now I want to know what side of that divide I fall on.
Now, one of the things that I just got hooked into is I read Paul Auster's Burning Boy, the story of Stephen Crane. And it's a fantastic book. It's 800 pages. And half of it is biography of Crane. And the other half is a fascinating look at how a writer reads. Do you know what I mean? Because he basically takes each of the stories and he explicates the stories and he kind of tells you why he thinks these stories are so strong. So I'm kind of going through the book again, and then I'm discovering Stephen Crane in ways that I never did. I mean, I did not, I was not one of those who had a remarkable teacher who made Red Badge of Courage come alive for me. So it was something I sort of had to get through. But I have a renewed interest in him now. I'm finding that's actually a kind of interesting way of approaching nonfiction and fiction, is to read a biography of an author and then slowly kind of go through, you know, their, you know, all of the books that they've written.
I was going to ask you, and you answered with one book here, but what are some of the nonfiction books you've read that you would recommend to me?
Well, I've been going, you know, I like you used to do, and you may still do it, but I read a lot of galleys these days, of books that are maybe just coming out now. And I've gone down the political rabbit hole probably way more than I should. So I've kind of rediscovered things by people like Heather Cox Richardson, who wrote a book called How the South Won the Civil War, which is all about Reconstruction and gives you an amazing, at least gave me an amazing sense of history of that period that I never had. I just had never encountered it before. I also started reading Ann Applebaum, who is someone that I never really knew much about her, except I would read some of her essays that she wrote in The Atlantic. And her book, Twilight of Democracy, is a very scary, it talks about America without really talking about America. She's talking about Eastern Europe. And then most recently, I've just read Steel, which is coming, it just came out. And Steel is a really interesting, measured account of how the steel was going to happen. But what it really is, it's a heroic account of all of those people, mostly Republicans, who stood up to the intense pressure they were getting to change the outcome of the election. So that's just a whole, that's one category of books that I found myself reading. I then started, I don't know, Connie, I don't know if you do this, but I'm very nostalgic in a lot of ways. So 1972, both conventions, the Democratic and Republican conventions, were in Miami. And I was a 17-year-old kid during that period. And we're coming up to the 50th anniversary of that. And so I reread Norman Mailer's St. George and the Godfather, which is about, George McGovern and Richard Nixon. And it was the same period that Hunter Thompson wrote about in Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail. But Mailer got it really right. So I'm really interested. I've been following this Mailer debacle in publishing. What are your thoughts about it?
Well, I think that, I don't know, and this is just sort of based on what I've been reading. I'm not sure there was actually really a big controversy. I mean, Random House decided not to publish it. Apparently there was no contract, but Michael Wolff needed people to read that story he wrote. Yeah. So my question is, it's a very easy thing to inject the phrase, oh, wokeness canceled such and such. That's how you get people to hate read you. So I have some questions about the whole thing. But going back to something you recommended, I have read a book by Ann Applebaum. This was a while ago, but I read Gulag. And what led me to Gulag was Martin Amis's House of Meetings, which was a novel. But I thought, my God, I don't really know that much about the Gulags and what that was like and how that started. And for some reason, I picked up her book and it was fascinating. I've never forgotten it. And she's somebody I've always meant to go back and read some of her other stuff because she's a hell of a reporter. And if you had told me I would be fascinated by a book about gulags, I would have, laughed in your face.
I would have said you were reading Solzhenitsyn or something.
Well, I was a little intimidated by that. The length of that was a little scary. And Ann Applebaum seemed maybe an easier entree into it, but yeah, she's fantastic.
Well, it's so interesting in terms of what our political landscape has done in terms of letting people who read political stuff or who are thinking about these things, it's made for some very interesting bedfellows, and people like George Will and all these others who are writing about the condition of where we are now, who would have been in their own silo 10 years ago. But there's this cross-pollination that's going on that I think is really, really healthy. And someone like Anne is a perfect example. The Gulag, that's the one that really put her on the map. I think that's the one she won an award for, and it's something I think I'm going to find myself going back to. It's interesting when you talk about audiobooks, I often find that nonfiction for me is what works really well on audiobooks as well, more so than fiction. Because with fiction, I often have to you know, I want to luxuriate in the writing, and I go back and I look at a phrase and I look at how it's written. But nonfiction is a little bit easier for me to let go of that.
I used to listen to nonfiction when I had a commute. I live in Hollywood and I worked in Doral for 7 years. And that's a very long drive, as anyone who lives in Miami can tell you. And I listened to a lot of nonfiction at that time. And I got a lot out of it. But I haven't had a commute since March 2020. And I find my needs are different as an audiobook listener when I'm walking as opposed to driving. I need stuff that's more, I find myself listening to suspense fiction more than anything. Because I've always been a crime novel reader. That's my safe space. That's my comfort read. Police procedurals, anything like that. I love stuff like that. And I find that stuff works well for me as a walker. But I would have a very hard time listening to, I don't know, the Hamilton biography, which I listened to when I was driving. That seemed, you know, I loved it and it was great, but I don't know that I'd get through it if I was walking. I don't know why that is.
Well, sometimes it's picking up the thread again, which is difficult. But when you asked me what I was reading, that was a kind of whole political strain of what my reading is. But I love reading about lives lived, whether it's fiction or nonfiction. And I got a book that's just coming out now by Catherine Schultz. It's called Lost and Found. And, you know, among booksellers, it's one of the most talked about books that I can remember in a long, long time.
I do like a good memoir. I want the person to have lived through something interesting to me. And, you know, I think a lot of memoirs get written that I'm not interested in, but when you get a hold of one that's good, it's really something else. What was the book? Oh, I thought I had a copy of it here. Oh, Memorial Drive. That book blew
me. Natasha Trethewey, right?
Yes, she's a poet, and you can tell from her language. And that is just a stunning book about her mother's murder. You know, she revisits it, and it's so painful, but it's so beautifully written. And something like that really sticks with me. And I read, one of the things I read the second one this year, I think I read the first one the year before, was Rainer Wynn's books. The Salt Path was the first one. And it was about how she and her husband, they lived in England, became homeless, and they decided to walk the 600 mile plus path through Cornwall.
Oh, that's great.
An account of their, and they were actually homeless, like they didn't have anywhere to go. So they were living in this tent as they walked this 600 mile path. And her husband had been diagnosed with this, some sort of disease that was, you know, it was going to be a chronic illness. And this was going to be their last time to do it. And I highly recommend that book. And then she did write a sequel to it called The Wild Silence, which was also good. But those, I do like memoir when, with something like that, that's very personal and very moving.
Well, Amy Bloom has one out that is just devastating. It's about her husband and his, his dementia and assisted suicide. Really, really rough.
But I love Amy Bloom, but that is rough.
Yeah, that's a rough one. Let's talk about mysteries. Let's talk about something that takes us away from all of this. Who's your new favorite? Who are you?
Well, Adrian McKinty, who I mentioned earlier, he's written other series, but the Sean Duffy series, I really love. And the premise of this cop, he's a Catholic cop. So in Northern Ireland in the 80s, that means everybody hates you. The Protestant factions hate you because you're Catholic. The Catholics hate you because you're a cop. You can't win. You know, you're just, everybody is against him. He's trying to solve these murders that happen. And it's fascinating. I also this year became acquainted with Jane Harper. Have you read any of her books?
I haven't.
She's an Australian writer. The first book I read of hers was called The Dry. And it's a great book. It's about a cop who comes back to his best friend growing up, has murdered his wife and kids, and he comes back for the funeral and then decides to look into the case to see if this is what actually happened. She's only written four books, but they're all good. Start with The Dry. And she's, I can't wait for her next one. I think her most recent one came out last year, so maybe she's due. And then just for fun, the folks in the book group got me started on a series by a British writer named Ellie Griffiths. And the character is a forensic archaeologist, which you would think, how can you keep this series going? But so far she has, and they're just light, entertaining whodunits. And they have kept me sane through the ups and downs of the end of 2021. But I like all the regular suspects too. I know Laura Lippman has a book of short stories out that I'm interested in. I will always read a Michael Connelly. And I have, I think, three books left in Ian Rankin's John Rebus series, and I am hoarding them like people hoard toilet paper. Because I don't want it to be over. So every few months I read another one, and I've only got three left. So that's,
yeah, it's such a great event with him in the store. He was so lively and so funny, and he's really a great guy as well, which is always, you know, when you meet a writer and they turn out to be, you know, someone who's really pleasant and good and funny, that's an extra boon to this whole thing.
One of the things I love about his books is you really feel like you know Edinburgh, you know, and its surrounding areas, because he's just, that sense of place is such a huge part of those books. And I enjoy that. It's, you know, it's armchair traveling as well as just a good mystery with really great characters.
You know, Connie, you were also a film critic for a while at the Miami Herald. You've worn just about every hat at the Miami Herald. You've made it a richer place over all of these years. Do you ever go through the process of thinking, oh, you know, this would make a great film?
Sometimes I think that. But you know, you just reminded me of something I've been meaning to tell you for a while. This happened while we were all kind of on lockdown. So it was earlier in 2021. I was flipping through movies on, I believe, Netflix. And I came across a film called All the Bright Places.
Oh, really?
And I said, oh, that's one of Mitchell's production company films. I'm going to watch that. Knew nothing about it. Mitchell, I sat on my couch and sobbed for 20 minutes after that movie was over. And I cursed you. And I cursed the moment I opened it up. It was very good. But I was unprepared for where that movie took me. I was mess, but what a great movie. I mean, I guess if I had, you know, had, you know, adolescent daughters, they would have warned me or told me what was coming, but anyway.
Yeah, no, that was you know, we could do a whole nother podcast about adaptation and what that means, but it was a really great experience for me and for our company. You know, my partner spent, we filmed it in Cleveland. She could have been a resident of Ohio. She spent so much time there. But I happened to go on set a few times, and watching Elle Fanning work and this young guy, Justice Smith, they were just fantastic.
Yeah, I had never seen him before, and he was very good.
Yeah, you'll see a lot of him. He's a young guy who's going to do a lot of good stuff. So Connie, now that we're just coming up to 2022, what are you excited about this year?
Oh, I can't wait. I cannot wait to get my hands on the Jennifer Egan book. I love all her work. And it's called The Candy Store. I think that's what it's called. So I can't wait to get a hold of that. I just think she's a terrific writer. And I like to visit, what was it? A Visit from the Goon Squad, which I guess this is kind of a sequel to. So I'm happy about that. I'm very excited about Douglas Stewart's new book, which comes out, I believe, in April, Young Mungo. He's the guy that wrote Sugi Bane, which is another book I loved. Heartbreaker, but just a great novel.
Our buyer, Gael, our head buyer, I think they've become friends. She discovered Sugi Bane, you know, when she read it in a manuscript and just kept talking about it and talking about it. And then it emerged into such a favorite of everybody's. Yeah, he's kind of amazing, isn't he?
Yeah, and there's a lot of autobiographical elements in that novel as well. But it's still a novel, and I'm fascinated by that, the way people use their lives to tell these stories, but they're fictional, but they have personal experience with some of this. I think that's why I'm drawn to his novel. He's also a really good writer, just a terrific writer. I remember watching, I believe books, no, it was the Miami Book Fair the year before last, when everything was online. I watched a conversation with Douglas Stewart, and he was so interesting. And the author who wrote, what's his name? Gerard, I'm blanking out on his name. But anyway, the interviewer asked him a lot of questions about the book. And he said, this really strikes me as a 19th century novel. And I think he was right. And I had never thought of it that way before. But Shuggie Bain is really something else. So I have high hopes for this new book. What are you looking forward to?
Well, I'm looking forward to Hernan Diaz's Trust.
Yes,
that looks real. I mean, it's the kind of big, meaty novel that I often love getting lost in. You know, it's kind of I think it's about the 1920s, but it brings it up, you know, into contemporary times. A novel that I read that was also kind of like that was The Lincoln Highway by Amor Towles. I don't know if you read it, but I just loved it because it took me into that period of the 40s and a lot of different, the 50s and a lot of different sort of areas of the United States. And it was a really great story as well. But Hernan, this comes, you know, a lot of people have recommended it and I look forward to that. Another one, or, you know, close to home, you know, Diana Abu-Jabber's book is one, Fencing with the King. It's one that I've actually already read. I read it in the galley, and it's really, really good. It takes place in Jordan. A young Jordanian-American girl goes over to travel with her father to Jordan for the very first time, and she encounters her Jordanian family. And it's just, you know, again, one of those books that jerks me out of where I am and plops me down into Amman, you know? Yeah, that's the beauty of writing, that it is able to do that. And then a writer that I've been following for a long time, Alex Segura, has Secret Identity out. And Alex is a comics guy, and he's done a really great job of writing a novel in which he takes a young Cuban woman who is involved in comics in the 80s and turns it into a murder mystery. And it's really quite good as well.
Well, both Diana and Alex are friends of mine, but Alex used to write reviews of graphic novels for me when I was the book editor.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he used to work with us. He was so good, and what he's done with his career is really, really quite something. I'm looking forward to Secret Identity too, because Alex is he's a good mystery writer, and I'm really curious to see what he does. He of course wrote the Pete Fernandez series, which is a lot of fun, but this is a little bit different for him, and he's kind of blending both his worlds. You know, he's got the comics world and the mystery world. He's kind of blending it in this novel. I'm real eager to read it.
You know, we're really lucky down here in South Florida. We have, even though Alex lives in New York, but we have a really vibrant community, a vibrant literary community of writers, wouldn't you say?
I would agree. And we have some of the best. I mean, who's better than Edwige Dantecott?
The last collection of short stories I read was amazing. In fact, this was a year of short stories for me. Did you discover Dantil Moniz at all?
Yes.
I always get it. I always confuse the title, but it's like Milk, Blood, Heat.
Milk, Blood, Heat. Yeah, very good. Very good. You know what else was an excellent book of short stories was Land of Big Numbers. Did you read that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, really, really good. Most of them are set in China. And again, it's a window on a sort of life that's very different than the lives we lead. you know, and it's really about freedom. And these stories are about freedom and how people define it, especially in a country like China, where your freedom is a very, very much an illusion. You know, so much is controlled by the government and you can do this and you can't do that. Great stories, though. Great stories. But there were a lot of good stories this year. I just read, what was it? Filthy Animals by Brandon Taylor, which was good. There's a lot of sex in it, though. I'm going to warn everybody out there, if you get the vapors about that, don't read that book. But I enjoyed it a lot. It was well done.
Connie, I could talk to you all day about all of this, and we should do it again really, really soon. Connie, I thank you for being on The Literary Life. This is such a kick. And, you know, we'll be seeing each other soon, I'm sure.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.